Welcome to Siege, a podcast about Castles and Crusades and other Siege Engine games, and whatever the hell else we want to talk about. I'm your host, Sam Dillon, and I am here with my wonderful co-host, George.
Hi, I'm George Hardy.
How are you tonight, George?
I'm great. How are you, Sam?
I am really good. I'm really good. So let's talk about unarmed combat. And George and I disagree about unarmed combat. George, do you have anything you want to say about unarmed combat?
I try to avoid it at all costs. I think it has gotten better. A statement that I made earlier about 3.5, where if you did not have one of these great feats, it was very simple to adjudicate. There's an attack of opportunity before the attack, or like the grapple, the overbearing, the sundering. And typically my villains would always make that attack of opportunity, which would always make the opponent fail their grapple or other check. It was very easy to adjudicate.
And you don't think the C&C rules are easy to adjudicate?
They're easier than I had thought. After reading through the script, it was...
Well, let me tell you why George and I disagree. George put a note in that said, oh, I got to tell people to have a cheat sheet about these. And I said, no, you don't. But here's why he said that. If you go to the printings of the player's handbook before the 7th printing, or maybe even before the 6th printing, you will find a set of grappling, overbearing, and pummeling rules that is very different from the rules that are in the current printings of the PHB. In the current printings of the PHB, the grappling, overbearing, and pummeling rules and the just normal unarmed attack rules are very basic and simple. And in fact, these rules were the rules that were the alternative rules printed in the Adventurer's Backpack supplement book. In the 6th printings and previous printings, so 1st through 6th printing, the grappling, pummeling, and overbearing rules were very different. In the 7th and later printings, they have become very much more simplified. And the reason they became simplified is because the designers made a choice to take what were previously alternate rules that were published in the Adventurer's Backpack and make those the rules in the PHB. And these rules say that if you're going to do an unarmed attack, you can just do a normal unarmed attack using your fists or your body or claws or whatever. And that's just a typical attack roll, a d20 plus your base to hit plus your strength mod versus the AC of the opponent. Okay, that's typical. That's normal attack. By definition, it's an unarmed attack, but it's not even a subdual attack. It's just an attack. You could cause death. It's just a normal attack. But then there are grappling, overbearing, and pummeling rules. So, George, why don't you tell us about the grappling rules currently listed in the player's handbook?
That's simply a d20 roll with your base to hit plus your strength modifier versus the armor class of your opponent.
And the point of the grappling, the reason why it looks just like a regular attack roll, but it's called something else, is that the idea is if you succeed on that roll, you don't do damage. It's just that you have now held the opponent. And now you've held the opponent and you can take your next turn and try to knock them down. You can try to knock down a pinned opponent. As long as you're holding that opponent, you cannot take any other action. And the defender can't do anything except try to break your hold.
No spell casting, no escape checks, nothing.
Right. The way that they break their hold is by making a successful grappling attack against you. Against the thing holding them, against the PC holding them, in initiative order, next turn. That's literally all they can do, okay? The defender and attacker now that are grappling each other, or the one that's grappled and the one that's pinned, they can do nothing except either continue that grapple, do an overbear, that's the attacker, or if they're the defender, they can try to get out of that. And overbearing is very similar. It's the same kind of roll. It's a d20 plus a base to hit plus a strength mod. It's just a regular attack roll versus the AC of the target, okay? And basically the idea here is that you are going to try to take that creature that you've grappled and knock them down. In fact, rules as written, they don't already have to be grappled. You can just overbear, like run into them and knock them over. But I have a caveat about that later. So if you made a successful grappling a check versus the target that you're about to try to overbear, you actually get a plus one to the overbear. So that's the reason why you might want to do the grappling before you overbear. And also, if more than one attacker is trying to overbear a single opponent, then you get you make one overbearing roll, but then you get a plus one for each attacker that is also trying to help you. So in other words, it's the case of if a 10 goblins come in and they try to grapple and knock down a fighter, you make one attack roll for that, and then you're going to get plus one for each additional goblin that is trying to knock that thing down. Okay. Right. So that's your gang up effect, basically. The difference between a grapple and an overbear is the grappling does not knock the creature down. In grappling, you're just holding them. Okay. In overbear, you're knocking them down. In grappling, they take no damage. In overbearing, they do take damage. They take 1d2 points of damage. Okay. If they were already grappled and you overbeared them, they are considered pinned on the ground and cannot move. Okay. For a pinned opponent, though, if someone else is trying to attack them, there's a plus 10 modifier to that attack because the person is pinned on the ground. It's being held there. Okay. If you knock someone down with an overbear and they're not pinned, that is, you didn't grapple them first, they can try to stand up the next round. Okay. And in fact, because standing up from prone takes a half move, they could actually stand up and attack, theoretically speaking. If they do so, though, from having been knocked down from an overbear, they take a -2 to hit on their attack roll. And if there's anyone standing over the prone individual, getting up is more than a half move. It actually takes your full round, and you have to make a dexterity save because you're basically having to slide out of the way and stand up and not invade the space of that person that was standing over you. So that's why it takes that dexterity save. Some basic rules: you can't grapple or overbear a defender that's two size categories larger than you. Some creatures cannot be grappled or overbeared, like large dragons, green slime, et cetera, et cetera. The castle keeper is going to determine if grappling and overbearing is possible. And the defender can break the hold by making their own grappling attack against the holder on their action. Even if they got overbeared, if the person is still holding them, they can still try to break that hold because they can't really do anything else. Okay. So the long and short of these two attacks are this. Typically, you're going to grapple to hold someone, and it's just a basic attack. But once you've done that, you can't really do anything else, and neither can they. All they can do is try to escape from you. But this is not really an escape roll. It's just an attack roll. Overbearing means that they already were grappled in most cases, and you're knocking them down. You're pulling them to the ground to make them prone, to make them easier to hit by all the other people that are attacking them. Presumably, if you're ganging up on them, that's what's going to happen. And then there are some specific rules for standing up from that. I think this discussion has made it sound more complex than it is. It's actually very simple. You just do a basic attack roll. You're doing a very simple attack roll. It's the effect that that attack roll has that's different. Grappling doesn't cause damage. Overbearing does. Grappling doesn't cause you to go prone. Overbearing does. With overbearing, if you already grappled, you get a bonus to your overbearing attack. And with overbearing, if there's more than one individual trying to do it, you only make one roll, but you get a bunch of bonuses for each individual that's trying to take part in that activity.
Yeah. Either way, you end up in a really bad position.
Right. If there's a lot of... So the thing is, like, because there's no other effect of a grapple other than you're being held, and now all you can do is your... So here's the thing. If it's a big, beefy fighter or paladin holding on to a little weakling wizard, it's probably going to be a bad deal for that wizard, right? Because that wizard would have to make, to escape the grapple, would have to make a d20 roll plus their base to hit, which is always going to be lower than a fighter, plus their strength mod, which is probably going to be lower than a fighter because they're a wizard. They're probably not high strength. And is versus the fighter's AC, which is probably going to be something really high, especially at higher levels when they have better armor. So that wizard is going to have a really hard time getting out of that grapple. Whereas if it's a fighter trying to grapple another fighter type of creature, it's probably even odds, right? It's probably pretty even chance that that creature can get out of the grapple next turn. So you have to kind of, you know, it doesn't really make sense for... Here's what I want to say. Unlike in third edition, when if you did grappling and the grapple actually succeeded and now suddenly it like breaks the game to try to figure out, okay, what's next, right? So you do need the cheat sheet, right? Because it opens up this whole other like set of actions and activities. In CNC, it doesn't do that. All it does is it says, let's make it simple. You make an attack roll, and if your intent is to, instead of doing damage, you just want to hold them in place, then you can do that. But then the only thing you can do is hold them in place for that whole round. And then they can try to escape on their turn. If they aren't able to escape on your next turn, you can get them onto the ground. You can knock them down. And then if you knock them down, they do take a little bit of damage for being knocked down, and it makes it easier for other people of your allies to attack them. Okay. That's literally it. And then it's harder for them to stand up if there's a whole bunch of people standing around them, as you can imagine. Okay. The pummeling rules is really just unarmed combat if you don't want to kill something. That's literally all pummeling is. So grapple doesn't kill the thing because it's not going to do any damage. Overbearing could kill because it does damage. Pummeling doesn't kill because it's purposefully meant to just do subdual damage and knock the thing out. So the whole purpose of pummeling is you're making a d20 roll plus your base to hit plus your strength modifier versus the AC of your target with the intention to only knock them out, not to kill them. So even if you were to do some kind of amazing attack and exceed, you know, you critically hit them and the critical rules said that you did like 4 times the amount of damage, right? Depending on what critical system you're using, and you ended up doing something that would have killed them, you don't actually kill them because pummeling says it's not lethal damage, no matter what. That's the point of it. Okay. Now, there is another combat maneuver that interacts with overbearing and grappling. And it's one of those things where you wonder why both of them are still in the book. And I'm going to explain why, or I'm going to explain how to deal with them, even though they're both still in the book. The thing that I'm talking about is trip, the trip rules. So, George, how do you trip someone?
To trip someone, you have to make an attack roll versus armor class 18, plus the dex modifier, plus the hit die. Once you make that, the opponent's not prone.
Right. And it still causes no damage, but now they're prone. And so you might be wondering, well, wait, that does the same thing as what an overbearing attack would do, but it doesn't do any damage. How come it's so much harder? Because think about it. An overbearing attack is a d20 plus base to hit plus your strength mod, so just a regular attack, and you just roll it versus the normal AC of the creature. In this, you don't roll it versus the normal AC. You roll it against AC 18 plus a dex mod, if they have one, plus hit dice. That means that that's a lot harder to do. And it doesn't even cause any damage. So here's the thing. To stand up from being tripped, it's the same drawbacks as if you stand up from an overbearing attack. So I'm not going to discuss those because it's the same. But tripping is a lot harder than overbearing. And so someone might ask, and someone did ask in the Discord a while ago, why would anybody ever want to trip when you could just overbear? Tripping is a lot harder. If the AC of the creature is only 14, it's a lot easier to overbear them than it is to trip them, because tripping automatically makes their AC 18. And so my answer is, you wouldn't do that. If you're smart, you would just use an overbearing attack, because it's easier to pull off, because the target's AC is probably lower than 18. Not very many creatures actually have a really high AC in CNC. So then the question was posed, well, why does trip even exist in these rules then, if there's an easier thing that does the same thing? And my answer is my house rule. And that is that in my game, a PC cannot use overbearing just to knock a person over. If you're going to use overbearing, you have to grapple first. So you have to do a grappling attack in the first round and an overbearing attack in the second round. And it makes it a 2-roll activity and a 2-round activity to get them to the ground. That's why the AC is lower than 18. But if you just allow, if you are a CK and you just allow a person to use overbearing to basically have the same result as a trip attack, you're making it so that trip shouldn't even be in the game, because nobody's going to do the more difficult thing because they're less likely to succeed to get the same effect. Does that make sense?
I think it does. Samuel, I'm wondering even if trip was an action in earlier editions of the Player's Handbook.
Yes and no. So it was a combat maneuver in the Castle Keeper's Guide. So along with in the eighth printing or in the seventh printing and later, along with them bringing in the overbearing, pummeling, and grappling rules from the Adventurer's Backpack, what they also did was they brought in the some of the combat maneuvers from the CK Guide and added those to the Player's Handbook. And that was in the CK Guide, the Castle Keeper's Guide.
Oh, interesting.
So if you look, for example, if you look at the sixth printing, the only combat maneuvers that are listed are dodging, disengaging, the two types of disengage we talked about, disarming, evading, and a flank attack. And that's pretty much it. And two-weapon fighting, which we talked about in the last episode. That's it. In the CK Guide, there were a bunch more, like shield wall and shield bash and tripping, and actually parry was in there rather than evade, and different things like that. And called shots, right, were in there. And all those got moved to the Player's Handbook. So if those had been in the Player's Handbook in the sixth printing before overbearing was changed, then it wouldn't be a contradiction, right? Because the old overbearing rules, it was actually hard to do that. It was difficult to knock that opponent down because in the old overbearing and grappling rules, the attack roll was against the AC plus some other modifiers. Like there was a size modifier, there was a strength modifier, there was whether they had strength prime or if it was a creature, if it had physical primes, right? There were all these different modifiers that could make that AC or number to beat go really high. And so that wouldn't contradict the trip rules, which also had start with that high AC. But because they went to the more simple version of the overbearing and grappling rules, it makes trip a really unlikely thing for any PC to choose to try to do because it just starts out with such a very high difficulty.
Yeah. I know the wolf used to just have to make a bite, or the warg, I'm sorry, just needed to make a bite attack.
Right.
To create the trip.
Yeah. Well, so that's different, I think, because it's a creature ability, right?
It is, yes. Yes, and that's the difference, I believe, as well.
Yeah, so if we were to look at the warg, right, it actually describes the whole thing that it can do. It can attempt to drag an opponent to the ground when it makes a successful bite. The opponent is allowed a dex save, to resist being pulled to the ground. They lose initiative the next round. And so the thing is, like that, so now they're prone on the ground, but they're then being dragged. They're trying to be dragged, right? Yeah, so that's a special. So the wolves and wargs can do it.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, but it allows a save to the opponent, but then it also doesn't have all of the other language around it, right? There's no
right.
If you're prone and you try to get up and attack it takes a negative two. Like none of that stuff really is discussed here. It's just saying, well, you're going to get tripped, dragged to the ground, right? You get a save. Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah. Yeah. So I think this trip, yeah, it's more like humanoid versus humanoid, right? Because if it's right. If it's more like an animalistic creature that has kind of a different body plan, that tripping is a lot different from the tripping that a kobold or a hobgoblin or something would do. So I feel like I started out by saying, no, George, you don't need notes for this. And then we just discussed it and it suddenly becomes, well, it is kind of more complicated, right? And that's actually why we wanted to address it in a different episode rather than just the last episode, right? Because we wanted to go into the details. And it is meant to be a more specialized type of set of actions, right? But I think my main point, and I don't know if you agree with me, George, but my main point for talking about these is not even because I like them all that much or I use them a lot in my game. In fact, they're very rarely used, okay? But I do think that it's important for the CK to understand these rules. If you're playing in a game with, say, a monk who's going to try to grapple people, or if you're playing with a type of creature that likes to trip, like wargs and whatnot, you need to know about the, well, how do I stand up from being prone rules, right? And you need to know about the, well, does this type do damage or does that not do damage? And it's very important to look at these because it's not just a simple, it's not really just a simple, oh, I attack that thing. Because even the grapple, if you succeed, remember, you can't do anything else now. If you want to do anything else, you end up letting go of that grapple. And so why did you bother to grapple them in the first place, right? So, you know, there's a lot of nuance to these that even though they're greatly simplified from what they used to be, it still could cause a great slowdown if the CK is not familiar with the rules. And that's really the point of talking about this in this episode.
And I think it also opens up a lot of opportunities. So, for example, going back to the initiative with large size creatures getting initiative on that first encounter, even your troll, a simple troll, is a large size creature.
Right.
So running up to attack it, it's going to get how many attacks? Normally they get three. They would just get one attack.
Trolls get
claw bite.
Yeah, they get claw bite. Yep. Or they get weapon attack, but that's, you know, that's a weird CNC thing, but yes, they definitely get claw bite, and trolls get rend as well. So, you know, they can, inflict additional damage and all that. So they're pretty, but yes, they are large creatures. So, don't charge the troll.
Whether you have a pole arm or not, it's not going to matter.
Yeah, that's right, because he's larger.
Yeah. It really does change the dynamics.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because the initiative is so basic and simple, just roll a d10, except when you start looking at the peculiarities of the game, right? And again, this is one of those things where, you know, this game can run really fast. It can play really fast. And you can just basically ignore all of these, because I'll tell you that I've run for groups who don't really care about combat maneuvers at all and don't really care about any kind of, like, they're not worried about, you know, none of them are using pole arms. Nobody's crazily charging the ogre, you know, none of them do that. Like they're much more sort of basic players. They're not trying to do any fancy moves other than creative things. And here's the thing about that. The creative things, one of the things that these guidelines give you, and the initiative rules and the movement rules and the combat maneuver rules, one of the things they give you is, as a CK, a good background so that you have an idea of how it might make something difficult or easy if the player decides to do something very creative. Because if they decide to do something very creative, there might not be a combat maneuver for that item. Oh, I want to stand up on my horse and I want to jump over the gap here and get to the top of this giant boulder. And I want to punch that thing that's standing on the boulder with their crossbow shooting at us. I want to punch him in the face. Okay, well, how do we adjudicate standing on the horse and then jumping across the chasm and then getting to the top of the boulder and then the unarmed attack of punching that thing in the, right? So that whole kind of crazy creative idea based on the scene, I can adjudicate that pretty easily because I know the rules and the special maneuvers that are available. And even if one of them doesn't exactly match what that player is saying they want their PC to do, I have some guidelines for how hard or difficult or what kind of penalties might apply to that particular setup.
I totally agree. And, you know, that's where we are doing this rules as written.
Right.
So for example, one of the things was with a grapple. I've already asked a player, because I know that they were really detailed on their character sheet, if they had a dagger in their boot or in, you know, on the back of their belt or something. Mm-hmm. And he goes, yeah, I have a dagger on my left boot on the outside. And he was being grappled on by a troll. I just was going for the, I'm crushing every bone in your body. And they believed it.
Right.
And I allowed him to pull the dagger out and stab the troll.
Right.
You know, just for that extra little flair, the rule of cool, whatever you want to call
it. Right. 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 Yeah. And, you know, that's one of the things. And I think we said this in our last two episodes, too. You know, CNC also has a philosophy, and this is sort of why they have this kind of vague specific set of rules, right? That I keep calling it vaguely specific. But the reason they have that is because they're trying to just give us options, and the rules should not be an iron thumb on your game, causing it to break down and not work right. The rules should be guidelines to help you figure out how you adjudicate that. Do you let that PC that's being grappled, you know, and being hugged to death by that troll, do you let them get access to their dagger? I mean, that's a question for any CK. Some might say yes, some might say no. The point is you have the option to do however you want to do it, right? You might say no, you can't because your arms are at your sides. But if another PC knows that you have that, they might be able to run up and grab that out of your boot. Or maybe the troll is holding on to both of you, and one of you is upside down and the other one's right side up, and the upside down one can actually grab the dagger, right? Like, there's all kinds of scenes that could be fun like that. And it's up to the CK to adjudicate those. And the best way to adjudicate things is figure out what works for your group, but try to be fair. And the way to be fair is to look at what's in the rules as written and then adjust to taste.
Fantastic advice. Know your group, know your players.
That's right. I tend to, it's kind of funny because it feels like an oxymoron, but the more of the rules that I know and that I'm sure about, the more likely I am to be more lenient with them when the party and when the players want to do something weird, right? Or when they want to do something that is a little extra from what they would normally be able to do based on the rules as written. If I know those rules as written, I'm okay breaking those a little bit, you know, like that thing you're talking about, grabbing the dagger. Like, I'd probably let my player do that because it sounds fun, right?
Yeah.
Especially if it looks like, oh, they're really stuck. There's really no way out of this, right? Like, that's really fun to give them a way to do it because of something that was previously established, right? That they had a dagger in their boot.
Exactly. I recall the early days of AD&D and DMs like looking for that detail. Mm-hmm. And I figured, yeah, exactly. That by today's standards, noting that on their character sheet, I think they get a little bonus from me.
Yeah, perfect. Is there anything else that you would like to say about the combat maneuvers that we talked about?
I think just be ready to use them if you're going to use them to keep the game moving.
All right.
Until next time, keep the can of Dr. Pepper cold and keep reaching for that pole line.